I don't need them. Lord knows I don't need them. Telling me I can see them, but I never lead them. Listen close to my leader. They tell me that they need me, but they trying to deceive me. I'm free now, please leave me. I'm taking my freedom now. I'm living in freedom now. I'm taking my freedom now. I'm taking my freedom now. I'm taking my freedom back. I'm taking my freedom back. I'm living in freedom now. Hey, top door. Heads down.
Hi, good morning, good afternoon, good evening. I just hope it's good wherever you are. And I want to welcome everybody to another episode of Inquisitive Minds. And we know we have not been on for a while, but we're never far from you and never far from your hearts, hopefully. And today is a very special day because, you know, at the beginning of the year for 2024, we were thinking, you know, what were some of the episodes that we had a lot of fun? What were the most popular that we got a lot of feedback on? And we decided to invite some friends back with us again to have a discussion about, I would say, a part three, right? So part one would have been love in the time of COVID, because COVID brought a lot of uncertainty, and we thought, why not talk about the regular things in life, right? Love and relationships and stuff like that. It was a fun episode. And of course, the second episode, just to bring some more controversy into the dialogue, only members love, which I will give the whole quote today. Last time I didn't give the whole quote. Well, I'll give the whole quote today. One person here, as one of our guests, might know the whole quote. I hope she does chips when she hears. But that was a long intro, but let's move directly into things. I want to say thank you to the ladies. And of course, I'll introduce from my furthest left, Maria, who I have not seen in such a long time. Hi, Maria. How are you going?
Hi, Brandon. Hi, everybody. I'm good. How are you doing?
I am good. I'm good. I cook a mean jira chicken today and it's come all good. So I'm in a real good mood. And of course, to my right, my little sister, who I'm fiercely defend, fiercely support, love her with my whole heart, JJ. Hi, Jay. What's up?
Hi. So good to be back here.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. And of course, my sister in from Central, you know, so I'm my own superhero, my sister in superhero, Sian. What's up, Sian?
I'm good. Happy to be here again. Hi, everyone.
And of course, we are here with the original host, with the most, my brother in philosophy, Ricardo Mitchell. What's going on, Ricardo? Boy?
Hey, I grate like coconut and chutney. I cannot complain. There's been so much going on. And I'm glad to be able to take a moment to spend time with quality people like yourself and Aaron.
Yeah. I've nothing to say.
It has begun.
I've nothing to say.
That's love. Course, love is lovely.
You understand? That's how you just show love this wrong, sir. Boy. And of course, the intellectual and the creative, the man who balances it all, DJ Aaron 868. Aaron, tell me something now, man.
I do balance it all, honestly. I struggle with balancing everything that's beyond my plate. So, but I'm trying my best to wear all the hats I have to wear.
And life's strange, yeah? Sorry.
Yeah. And the next thing, I'm glad to be back in this space, though. You know, Inquisitive Minds is a non-radio forum, so we could say what we want here.
I'm going to say it's strange because, you know, when you look on the outside, you think, hey, this man has his stuff together, operating, getting things done, you know? But sometimes life will be a little bit different when you're on the inside, you know? So we had these two episodes, so we had a lot of fun talking about love and relationship. And that's from our perspective. We are millennials, you know, we're in between some generations, kind of in the middle of the dynamic. And, you know, there's a lot that we would have learned over the years, and maybe things that we pick up from the elders that we could talk about. But it's just interesting that we also have some philosophies that we have been tried and tested over time. So I'm going to quote the great Kwesi Antoine Biff, the original senpai, Ninja the Hidden Leaf. So Kwesi's quote used to be, not used to, he defends this in depth. He says, only men does love, but women does rather and prefer. So that was the second part of the quote, which he will defend that. I can't. But he has a huge argument about why that works. Don't know, right? But he says, only men does love, women is rather and prefer. Rather and prefer, all right? Yeah, so, but I train it up in the air just for you all to ponder on as we go through. But in kicking things off, I just wanted to get a sense from you all in terms of, like, post-COVID and as you all interact with everyone and you're looking at society and all things developing and how people are relating to each other, what are you all thinking about what's happening in terms of Trinidad and Tobago, in terms of relationships and where people are at, in terms of our generation, and when you look at our generation versus the generation coming after us, and maybe even reflecting the generation before us? I just wanted to get a perspective on that. I trained it up in the air, and I'm asking anybody in particular, all right? So let's train it up in the air. What do you all think?
A lot to think about.
Yeah. I think we have a lot of people across the board, male, female, who probably post-pandemic, probably modern, like, I don't know, need a lot of therapy. People walking around a little damaged, you know? And I think people reflect what's going on in the world. The world is a damaged place. And people, as they always have, want to love. They want to be loved. So it's not relationships at a standstill. People not, you know, venturing forward into trying. But I think it's kind of problematic on many levels. Gender dynamics, human dynamics, pressures of modern existence, social media, information overload, DMs. It's a lot. So relationships are under a lot of pressure, and people are under a lot of pressure. And we have a lot of jaded, damaged people trying, as humans do, to connect and to love and be loved. But it's rough out here, from my perspective.
I agree with Sion. I think a lot of people are trying. And that's what I noticed. A lot of people are trying to get out there again. But I think there's a lot of caution. And I've noticed a lot of caution from men especially, who have experienced a lot of hurt and letdowns from women, you know, that they can't trust, and they react in whatever way that suits them. But I've noticed that there's a lot of hesitancy. I used to think that the hesitancy was more on the female side, but I see it a lot more reflected in the men. I don't know what you all think, but that's what I have observed.
Jill, as a professional in terms of the field, you know, the mind and interaction and so on and so forth, what are your thoughts on that?
I mean, everybody's experience is unique, and I try to hold to that. I do hear a lot of complaints about there being pee in the dating pool, from women primarily. So I know it's difficult, especially for, you know, women within this millennial age range. It's harder. We have to manage that tension between, before, you know, what our parents would have instilled in us in terms of, you know, the way to go and get an education and you'll get a good job, and, you know, also managing that with the other force of, you know, well, we also grew up in the time of independent women and feminism and make sure you do everything you can do to not have to depend on a man. Again, also stemming from, you know, ensuring that for our parents and grandparents to ensure that we did not experience what a lot of them would have experienced, you know, that financial restraint, or rather that constraint in not being able to leave because you had financial dependence on your partner, you know, so ensuring that we had that education to kind of move away from that. And so a lot of women, I'm seeing, we're not sure how to partner. We're not too sure how to be a partner within the relationship without, you know, cringing or becoming immediately defensive when words like submission is thrown out. especially within a spiritual perspective. So I think it's quite a lot of things going around. We know what we want, but then we also don't want to be people who giving up what they want. We don't want to be accused of settling. Men also have to deal with a lot of, you know, I don't want to say hate, that's a strong word, but, you know, a lot of vitriol maybe coming out from some women about what men should be doing and, you know, being a high value man and all these things that are being thrown out there. So I think it's really difficult for men and women in this time. And, you know, just to echo the sentiments of the ladies, everybody's trying to find their way to the person that they want, because I do believe we were made for relationship. Not just romantic, but we were made for connection. We were made for that relationship. And so I do believe that there's always going to be some sort of yearning for that. For some people, it's very superficial. They're fine with just your regular Tinder hookups and they're good. And for a lot of people, they want that yearning to be deeper. That yearning is for something deeper. So I think it's a lot of layers. It's a very big onion.
That is right.
Aaron, being the former president of the Single Men's Association of the Republic of Trinidad and Tobago, SMRT, right? You know, as a former president of Smart Man, I know he is now.
Smart
Man.
Single Men's Association of Republic of Trinidad and Tobago, SMRT.
Oh, smart!
It sounds like something else. Eh? Just saying.
Firstly, there was never man at the end of it. And you threw in Republic too. So it was just the Single Men Association of Trinidad and Tobago.
Smart.
Yes. Smart.
Sounds kind of close to smart. I don't know how I feel about that.
Right.
Single Men's Union of TT.
So smart now. that took a turn pretty quickly, but
I need a new circle of friends. I'm just saying. if you would like to be my friend, please comment below. It is welcome, because clearly these people who I call my friends,
wow,
they like to throw them under the bus. Like, if you know, I don't know.
I am excluded from that, because okay, I'll leave that there.
Yeah.
But Aaron, as a member now of the Supported Men's Association of the Republic of Trinidad and Tobago, how have your views on relationships changed since our conversation in COVID to now, or have they changed at all?
For those that know me well, anybody would know I was always a quote-unquote lover boy. I believed in that you date with intent, right? So you're dating to get married, or you state what you're dating for, like, just leave it that way. So as I think said, the Tinder hookup, if that's what you're looking for, state it up front. If you're looking for something serious, state it up front. But for me, I always viewed dating as something which had meaning. So that never changed for me in my intrinsic system, dating with meaning. In terms of what I've observed, on the other hand, social media has screwed up, and I'm using polite language there. Social media has messed up dating standards, or what is expected, the matriculation standards in dating. Right? You see that thing that you all mentioned about the high value man? What the friends? Really? Because for me, if you are dating, nobody is complete. No individual is complete. And the need for companionship is to find somebody who matches what you are looking for, as well as find somebody who would meet the things you are looking for. So this high-value man and this high-value woman and all these different things that social media is shoving down our throats without apology as to what a relationship is or should be, something needs to stop with that. And I think is that social media needs to stop. My values have not changed, but social media is spewing a narrative of what a relationship should be, or what a relationship needs to look like in this box for it to be successful, that a lot of us unfortunately cannot live up to. So we go and fail because it's not looking like this box. But you know what? Your relationship might look like this circle and it will be successful because it's what's worked for you. I hope that answers your question, Caro.
I just would prefer if you stop throwing up gang signs on the people on them podcasts.
What gang is that?
Circle Square? All of them remember Circle Square?
Circle Square is a vibe.
Clearly,
that's a Christian show.
That was before me.
I'm not going to audition only age with that one word.
Gang. Bernard, you incited this entire thing. And I am curious. I know the episode was very well received. I thoroughly enjoyed the conversation and conversations that stem from it.
But for you, what?
The boots fly down with the ring.
I don't know what that was. That was the sound of the Scarlet Ibis delivering a ring, right? During a wedding proposal, because these are the heights that people are going to know to do it for the gram now.
What?
But,
that'll be real.
Yeah. Oh,
you really know your feel of fear.
The expectations are really high.
But Brendan, what prompted you in terms of what have you noticed in terms of, you know, the during and post-COVID situation that prompted you to say, well, hey, let me get the expert back on board?
It was because of my own, like, transition from COVID into what I'll call back to real life. And I noticed something within myself in terms of my ability to hold, like, an in-depth conversation, because everything was, like, through the medium of the computer. So when I go back to real life now, in terms of that sort of relationship, and even in real life, it was always a quick conversation because I don't want to catch COVID now. So I talk to you for a few seconds and I'm gone, right? And then now it's like, I would say only like last year into this year, you know, like I find like I'm getting back like into that mode of, hey, you could sit down and have the length of a conversation, how we used to do it before now. So I wondered if everybody else experienced in this way. And then I was like, I wonder how it works with people who are not relationship level, trying to build something together or trying to get to know each other. How would that work now? Or maybe it's just me, something wrong with me, right? Which I could accept too, right? But I was wondering if other people had that kind of weird transition into, you know, talking through a computer, then meeting and talking real quick. Quick is the word, and you're not really having that length of conversation to the point where you're kind of back to normal and you're navigating that space of having conversation. Sorry for the long ramble, but this is how I kind of think it out now, you know? And that's what I was thinking about. I was wondering if other people, you know, having that experiences and the kind of state of play, you know, and even though we may not live that sort of relationship life, but our friends and our colleagues and people, maybe they're going through that now. I don't know, you know?
I was very wary of the fallout of the pandemic in the sense that I was telling people that COVID was the mosquito. The malaria is what comes after. The real trouble is what happens after COVID. And I've seen divorces from people that you didn't expect to get divorced. I've seen very unlikely partnership form in terms of people that I would have never guessed would I get together, end up getting together. I think it has caused a significant shift in the way that we perceive not just relationships on the whole, but our own relationships. I've seen an uptick in people who are willing to go to therapy because they realize, well, if every relationship I've been in have particular problems, and I'm the common factor, well, then maybe it has something for me to work on. I've also seen people just get comfortable with the idea that they're seeing other people going to therapy because they want to work on themselves and it has nothing to do with the relationship. So even the relationship itself is something that I think we see evolve a little bit over that time. And now that Aaron gone, I could truthfully say I'm very impressed by everyone's attire this evening. Right, everyone will come out nice and proper for them. This is going to air. This is going to present very, very well on camera. I want to say to all the owners here because I would have to put a caveat And when he hears this, he is going to take it out on me. Now, it's really nice to see some of the lovely faces and personalities come together to discuss something. And there we go, back to and rubber baby. I really firmly believe that the changes that we're seeing are significant. And while it might have been a result of social trauma, the fact is there have been social traumas before and there are going to be social traumas after. You know, it's just that it was so collective now that everybody had to kind of pay attention to everybody. You know, for something that was so isolating, I think it made us way more aware of each other.
Yeah, I agree. In terms of, well, Aaron kind of showed one side of social media, which is to create a project a certain kind of reality that people who are connected to each other start to share and invest in and believe and, well, just project, right? Rather than the truth. But I think during the pandemic and after, people leaned heavily on social media and some good things came out of it. So for instance, TikTok. TikTok, I can tell you, for me, made me realize that some things that I thought were very intrinsic to my experience. It's like, wait, now we all live in the same life out here. That's connectedness. And then I see that in my students as an educator. The things that they're more aware of now, they're more aware of mental health. They're more aware of it because other people are sharing their issues, their particular issues, and they're realizing, well, it's not me alone, it's you too. So it brought a kind of connectedness, maybe not directly in terms of relationships, but experiences. So there was a flip side to it as well. And I think it also came, that whole idea of normalize this and normalize that, we have kind of effectively begun to normalize therapy, mental health, men's issues, because it actually is social media on one level, on some levels. It's working to what it was intended to do, right? That kind of crowd, sharing, understanding, etc. And I think in the aftermath of the trauma, that the social trauma that the pandemic and COVID was, there is that spin-off that I'm seeing, and perhaps the willingness to go to therapy that who mentioned before, they're seeing an increase in people with, I think, Jeff, right? It's kind of connected to that. I really am seeing a lot of my colleagues, my friends, my students talking about, yeah, I need to see somebody and I'm going to ask about it. And could I, the guidance officer office by in my school is full. And there is no stigma. They're lining up, they're waiting, they love her. Sometimes they have a little piece of cake for Miss. They are invested. If she comes and she's like, I need to see certain people, before the pandemic, she'd have to come hush-hush outside and be like, just make it seem natural, but around 10 o'clock, send so-and-so and so, right? Now you'd have other students reminding that student, remember, you need to go. So I see some positives coming out of it, yeah? How it plays into relationships, I guess we will see. But people trying, you know, and people more inclined to do it. And then social media is also like an extension of real life in terms of they say what you put out is what you attract. So the algorithm works in your benefit too. So more and more you expose yourself, you click on the right things, you click on a certain kind of content, and more of that comes your way. So it has two sides. Sometimes you can become very insulated because you're only being flooded with content that you show interest in, etc. But it also gives you community. And I think a lot of people don't have that. We don't have the block. We don't have the older men talking to young boys. We don't have a lot of those things. So community is coming through social media as well. You know?
Yeah. You see that students reminding students, hey, don't forget how to go and see Miss. Yeah, that.
Yeah. It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
And it strikes me all the time. Huh?
I can imagine witnessing that and realizing to yourself, wait, it is very, very different to what we might have experienced if we were troubled coming up now.
Yeah, you know, they will remind each other and nobody bats an eye. I was experienced by last form five who would check in on each other so-and-so not here today, so we just want to check in on him. But what? They're very, very, but as the generation as well, and I think we could learn from them certain things like that. They're very open about supporting each other, checking in. Yeah, no, it's a beautiful thing. It is. Yeah, Gen Z is very, but I see it in millennial friends, and I see a hesitance in terms of therapy, mental health for men. Our generation still kind of hesitant, but there's more willingness, I think, because they're key signal people who put out, hey, yeah, and I do therapy and blah, blah, blah. And so it's better, but there's still a kind of a stigma, you know? Mm-hmm. I think so. Yeah. I don't know if Jael is seeing that. Jael looking so like, I don't know, people, I'm in the trenches here. And it's still rough.
It's still rough. I still have more female clients than I do males. I work you know, as an affiliate with, you know, a couple of EAP companies, and so I can't even say it's a cost thing, right? Because for some people that would be the factor that keeps them from accessing mental health services. But you know, even with EAP, I think I have maybe 2 male clients right now. That's not, you know, I mean, I'm very happy that they have come. But of course, and one is, you know, one is 35 and one is maybe 27. So, you know, that's fine. You know, one came primarily for a relationship issue, but the other one is, you know, that's not what it is. So I can't see it in my practice. Maybe with other people's, they're seeing it. And if that's the case, that would be great. But I think, you know, for me, I haven't really seen that. I've seen males more willing to talk about it, you know, encouraging people to go to counseling, saying that mental health is a good thing. Are they necessarily practicing what they preach? I don't know. But I am glad, as you said, that the conversation is happening. And I think you're seeing it represented in media through, of course, all these videos and even some of the satirical or the parodies that people will do. But also in shows like Love is Blind. Yes, I watch it. Don't judge me. Right? And I'm bringing it to the conversation. I did that.
No shame.
I did it. Thank you, Maria. That's why you're my friend from a long time.
Yes.
Yeah. So, Backstreet Boys and Love is Blind. That's us. Anyway. But you see it, and everybody, you know, if they've watched this season, they're speaking about, you know, particularly Clay. Two of the guys in particular, Clay and Matthew. Clay and Matthew.
Matthew.
Right? But, yeah. Matthew, and I use this word, everybody's calling him the serial killer looker, like prison. Yeah. So Matthew, as the, you know, who's not really talking. Then you have Clay, who's, you know, everybody seems to have taken him as this representation of what the average black man is right now and his state of mind. And, you know, is he doing the work? Is he really going to counseling? And, you know, all those things. So I'm glad that even within reality TV, at least they're bringing it into mental health is coming into the discussion. Some of those issues are very real. And of course, we know everything is packaged for entertainment, for our consumption. But they still have those very real issues that come up. Are you healing from what would have gone before in your previous relationship? Because I know people that believe that your previous relationship have nothing to do with your current relationship. Even if you're making
and they the say exact it, same mistake. That has nothing to do with it. Yeah.
That has nothing to do with it. Right, especially I get that from males, you know, like that they're separate because y'all are very good at, you know, compartmentalizing and separating. But then how are you sure you're not repeating mistakes, right? If we're not willing to look at it, you're not dwelling in the past, but you want to make sure that you're not, you know, that you're being aware and you're being accountable. So I think it is important to ensure that you do have that look back, but also recognizing, seeing how it's coming to us in social media, in reality TV. It's making its way into the conversation. But have I seen that trend in my own practice? I can't say that I have.
For those that don't know, I actually work at an EAP company, right? No, I'm not a counselor. Just putting that out there one time.
I didn't know that.
Wow. Anywho, JL. Yes, I work at an EAP company, and from pre-pandemic to current, or as I would say from BC, which would have been before COVID, to now, there has been an uptick in men accessing counseling services on our end. I don't have all the data, like JL, who coming in for relationship issues and all these different things. But in terms of the amount of men that I see in general accessing the service, it has increased. So what do I
cross your errand, but is this younger, are these younger men or are these more millennials? What age range would you say?
Wow, that's a tough one to really quantify. But I do see a lot more men of my age and older. And then I also see the younger ones, the ones around 24, 25, 26. And then, well, there are a lot of young children, well, young boys who access for child psychologists is what you call that, Jill?
Yeah. Or child therapist.
A child, yeah. So there are upticks from young men, from young boys to older men. I hope that answers your question, Maria.
In terms, just to kind of come on to what Aaron was saying, in terms of like the younger ones, based on my experience, they do tend to want them more for like behavioral issues. Not young like 20s, but you know, teens. But older, just to clarify, when we say young, because you know we're all in that stage where anything could be young. but yes, I'm hoping that the Gen Zs and the Gen Alpha or whatever's after that, that they are coming for their own development as well, which will translate to healthier relationships overall.
I have a question for you guys though. Because it's built on, it's based on something that came to me recently, and it blew my mind. In that, it's not why is Cardo going incognito?
The hoodie is on.
You know, it was strange to me, and I realized that as a woman, I probably never processed the process of going to therapy to talk to seek advice from a professional in this way. But the person is telling me that it's hard to get her significant other to go to therapy because he first has to rate the person to welcome what they have to say. I had to see you as somebody that, I don't know, I like, you know, the honor system, the kind of like men and that hierarchy and that. So it made me start to wonder, are y'all wired to not just approach therapy openly from the jump or even the person who's your therapist? Is there a kind of skepticism that prevails initially that has to become over? And this person, you have to go through a process where you know after probably a one session, it's like, you know what? Yeah, he's a man talking sense. And then even more specifically, this might be ridiculous because it sounded crazy to me, but I mean, perhaps she's onto something or we're onto something here. She's saying that he prefers a man, a male therapist. And that man has to be a manly man. Probably in terms of stature, poise, or whatever. He wants a man's man. He's putting a lot of reasons and benchmarks as to how will he even begin to accept what's being told to him in therapy. And I never thought of it like that. I thought, hey, you have your certification, you went to school. I don't care if it's male or female. It might be different talking to a man than a woman, but therapy, we going in. The point is I want to do therapy, but are there all those hurdles? Is that like a thing for, I mean, y'all are well-adjusted males, but can you see some of the men you know putting those kinds of, you know, yeah?
I could go first to get myself out of the bay one time. I think to a level is an accountability thing, because I have seen it with both men and women that you want to go by somebody who not go and hold you accountable if you're going for counseling sometimes, because you're so strong willing in a situation that you don't want somebody that go and pull up your socks now and tell you, hey, your partner was right. So you want to find out the credentials, you want to find out the background, you want to find out all these different things so that you won't have to adjust your behavior. But you still will want to go because your partner's saying, if we don't go, we might done. But you don't want to go to adjust your behavior because it's too much work out of pain on myself.
That's
so
scary.
And that's the thing, eh? Now, there's also the other end of the spectrum where you're saying that you want to, for me, no, regardless of the professional I'm going to, you must be qualified.
So if I know,
for example, my therapist is supposed to have a master's in psychology, and you want to carry me, and this is in no slight to religious institution, you want to carry me to the priest for counseling as the first choice, I may be a bit skeptical.
Oh, well, no. This is actual people who have their certification, their accreditation.
Right. So, that's what I'm saying. So if you're telling me, let me go by John down the road, who used to talk to his brethren, I'll be skeptical. I want to know what is John's qualifications. There's no slight at anybody named John, I'm just saying. But once you are qualified, for me personally, I would have no issue. But
can you think of friends of yours or men in your circle who would hedge like that?
And that's what I'm going to say. For me, from what I've heard recently, the men that I speak to about some issues and stuff, that they would more tend to want to know who we going to, if there's what it is do. And that's because they don't want to do the corrective action that follows the conversation, because they want to stay true to what they have been doing. So it's like, I will go with
somebody who proved them right, rather than...
But it's somebody who's supporting my point of view, as opposed to the point of view of the... And I'm back to the box again. The point of view of the relationship to move forward. For that box to grow now. So we're going from just staying within the box to now the box had to grow. Because, you know what? We want to stay inside this little box with our point of view alone, and that outside person might make me change.
Yeah.
Hi. I like that because, come to Carlo.
He's trying to duck. No, I just find him moving real quiet. Come on, go ahead.
Carlo, out of the shot yet or no? If you already pay attention to it, Carlo has moved 3 millimeters to the left.
Yeah,
You see what I mean?
We're trying to get out of the shot.
I know, see, move with the spirit, you're ready to talk. Let me hear what you want to say. I don't get to live another day.
It's so funny, huh? Like how so sometimes when we do those things, and from my experience, is because we want to see somebody who we perceive to be just like us to validate our position. When we're doing this, just paint up another wall now. And then, you know, and then if somebody call you on your, forgive my tune, but if somebody call you on your bullshit, you get very upset.
We could say that?
I guess so. Well,
you can say male feces, right? So is it that we could only receive a bullshit call from somebody who we think is like us, like-minded?
It is to extent, because I think it's a reflection of the ego, and which is healthy in small doses, but in large doses it can be very, very toxic. So yeah. It's like, you know, I remember my first therapist who I loved, you know, she's retired now, and you know, I had that same experience where it's like, you know, I don't sure if I can relate to this person and this and that and the other. And she called me onto my bullshit in a very, very professional way and made me realize that, listen, the way that you feel is okay to just feel, you understand? And, you know, it was a real eye-opening thing for me. And, you know, she connected with me by giving me examples of, and listen, this lady has been at the center of some of the very large political scandals in Trinidad and Tobago. I am not even sure if she was supposed to tell me some of those things. Of course, I don't know names, but it's amazing the kind of things that's been happening. And it's like, and she said, you know, there's a lot of sad people outside there. Yes. You know, that are sad, men and women, you know. So I think that's just another wall.
Well, before Cardo jumps in, I just want to put in there, in therapy, just like with any other relationship, you have to feel comfortable with the person. So I agree with everything that has been said, because there are some people who really do just look for excuses. But I tell all my clients that in the beginning, if at the end of our first session, you're not comfortable with me, that's okay. But you have to let me know so that I can refer you to someone else, because, you know, if you're not comfortable, you're not going to open up, and we're not going to be able to build that trust, which is important in a therapeutic relationship. Right. So that's why even from before, sometimes you ask people, do you want a woman? Would you be more comfortable with a man? Like, there's nothing wrong with that, even if the motivation may not be genuine. Right. It is part of being able to be open. So that's one. And the second thing is, I think a lot of people, but especially men, do tend to hear things differently when it comes from someone else. Not even if it's another woman. Right, but if the person who's telling you anything is too close to you, they're not hearing that. But if somebody else says it, then it's like, hey, you know, this person came and this was a good idea, and their partner is like, but I said the same thing. Wait, how is it different? You know, but because it's coming from somebody who's not within that sphere, it's a little bit easier to receive it. So I just wanted to put that little caveat out there, so Carlo could come and run any dance now, full force.
And I'm going to say, let the record show Cardo muted himself.
He's trying, so yeah, wow.
He's really interesting. This is a lot of challenge, right?
Yeah. Can you guys hear me now?
Yes, we can.
Yes, we can.
Yeah.
All right, so, this would have been a really good opportunity to deflect by asking Maria if, having done what our year,
No, pointing. Don't bring Maria into this. There's no deflection today.
Because of the substantial amount of time that I've spent with JL doing chit chat, shameless plug for our mental health podcast, right? I've learned, and it has confirmed several things. Different people have different tastes, preferences, and because relationships are so subjective, choosing a therapist is a significant part of your journey. Not because it's a franchise where you go and get the exact same recipe from every distribution outlet. So somebody not being comfortable with somebody or wanting to qualify them as a person who's going to be an influence on them, it should be a part of the process. It should be. I shouldn't dread having to go to therapy because I don't really like the person's vibe, right? But in terms of the specific question that has been asked, I would suggest that as a man, that if I'm going to defer to you, if I'm going to allow you to take leadership for the growth of my emotional intelligence, if I'm going to subject myself with vulnerability and transparency, if I have to defer to you, I'm not just going to gift wrap my respect and give you the benefit of the doubt and see what you do with it. You might have to earn it. Similarly, if I walk into a barber shop and I see he zogging up somebody else's head, I'm walking out. Right? If I go to a mechanic and the first thing I do is see somebody complaining about your prices, I'm going to be like, at the end of the day, we qualify generally who our service providers are as men. I don't see any reason that there should be an exception when it comes to our mental health. We're going to qualify. We're going to demand that you qualify. And I don't mean be certified. I mean that you be qualified. Because in my personal experience, there are a lot of people who have no intentions of going to therapy until they have a conversation with the brethren down the road who makes them feel okay with doing it. One of the reasons that I am not in the professional, in the field professionally is because I'm a funnel. I'm the guy that you're going to talk to when you don't feel like going to a therapist who's going to direct you to a therapist. But you would not have done that if I had not qualified it. But you trust me, because Cardo does reason, Cardo does talk sense, or Cardo has a reputation that says I can defer to his judgment. So it's necessary components of the same thing. But there has to be some level of deference. If I don't trust the recommender, I am not going to trust the recommended. And that moves from not just the relationship, but also to the information that you present. If you present the greatest healing opportunity for me, I might not take it because of who you are. So at the end of the day, the messenger has as much to do with the message as the message. So men going to want to qualify. I do acknowledge that there are many people who just want to tick the box of this is a requirement, so they can't tell me I ain't going. It's like you go to church and you're on your phone right through. You can't tell me I ain't going to church, but you're not really there. Mm-hmm. You know, people do that all the time, right? We do, it's across the board, men and women, right? But in terms of men and therapy, particularly with something that goes against the way that we've been socialized when it comes to communication and emotional awareness, much less for emotional intelligence and communication, then you had to come correct, because the first thing that raises not even a red flag, but a yellow or orange or maybe even a green flag, I might say, yeah, and I feel like good. This is the same thing I was talking about. And that is where the deference comes in. Somebody who you trust to take lead will have to tell it, boy, what is he really doing, boy? And it might be a friend, it might be a brethren, it might be somebody that you respect on work because of the impact that they had on you. But for men, because we're not socialized to communicate on this emotional level, the trust has to exist in the form of deference to somebody that you might already have an existing relationship with, or you're willing to have one with because of somebody else's recommendation. I've also seen the random person sitting in the taxi and say, my glasses, man, you wouldn't believe. Because I have that air of whatever listener, right? I don't come across as if I don't know. So a stranger would see me and suppose that I know, and they would infer deference. You know, which is one of the reasons I'm glad I went gray early. Because when I reasoning with you, but then you hear my talk, I look like an elder, but I come across like a peer. So now I've actually married the mentorship and peership that is required for that trust and that deference that would allow me to tell you, dog, you gotta talk to somebody who's going to be able to do more than direct you to somebody else. I don't want you to rely on Cardo because he does reason and listen and he understands, because I'm not going to be able to properly provide you with a course of action that is going to help you heal. But it's a necessary thing. But the bottom line comes down to men not going to defer just because. The same challenge that women have or might have with submission, we have with vulnerability, because that is also a submission and requires some deference. I'm going to give you information that you could possibly weaponize. You ought to earn that, or at least prove that you're not going to misuse it. And that is reflected in our personal relationships, much less for one that is going to be therapeutic. So yeah,
I think that was an excellent response, boy.
It's good stuff.
See, Annie, you messaged him that question before.
No, I did not. The man, he percolate. and he produced. I like
it. Honestly, I feel all the time he was quiet, nice, he was probably writing.
Hung wing. He hung wing it.
God, was writing that response. Ricardo wrote that response, honestly.
You're like, Ricardo, too much.
I want to flip it up just a little bit. What do you think is happening in the land of women in terms of, from your experiences, whether relationships, mental health, women in society, down with the patriarchy kind of thing? And I'll try to start off by saying, and from my point of view, like, what I have realized, it took me a while to get there, because we kind of socialized from the older generation, if somebody asks you a question, they want to answer, right? So ask a question, they want an answer. From my experience with some women, they don't necessarily want to hear your answer. They just want to make sure that you're there and you're listening deeply. And it took me a little while to get it. You know, my wife will ask me a question, I'll be like, all right, so the logical thing is, like, I already know that. So I didn't ask you to get that. Right? I just want to get your view. So my interpretation of your view is a way to listen. So, you know, I'll sit quietly and listen. And, you know, I'll throw in one or two words, but not necessarily give the answer. And I find those conversations to be a lot more constructive than the, you know, the logical kind of reasoning that, you know, come about in a particular way. You know? So I throw that off the top of my head. What has been happening in terms of, like, from a woman's perspective? And, you know, I even thinking about everything. I'm thinking about Me Too as well, the Me Too movement, which I consider myself a feminist, which I'm extremely happy about. Right? I'm happy about those things. So I just say, let me throw that out there in terms of what you think is happening with women in society. And women can answer first if you all want. Or the fellas, if you all want to throw their hat in first. I want to meet my mic cross on the screen and off it.
Go ahead. I will start. I could just speak from my personal experience, right? I am the product of, I would start from my grandmother on my mother's side. I grew up hearing stories as a young girl about my grandmother. You know, she raised so many kids. Didn't work, but super, super bright. But because of the circumstances, she couldn't go to school, secondary school, but really, really bright. And didn't have her own source of income, but had to rely on my grandfather for everything, you know? And she could have become bitter. She could have become cynical and jaded, but she translated that into teaching her girls in particular to become educated, to become self-sustaining women. Fast forward then to their generation, they became educated, self-sustaining women who got married as well, so and had kids and everything, and translated that into me. And that was further, you know, reinforced in an environment like convent, where it's all about, you know, women of worth, women, you know, we have no men around to help us lift the chairs, but, you know, so it was just so programmed in me from a young age to be this kind of, you want to call it feminist, empowered woman, that kind of thing. And, you know, now in my 30s, I think when I look back at my life, it has just been so programmed for me to just be like a driver, A-type pushing in my life. But you come to a point where you realize that no matter how much and how strong you are as a woman, how much of a feminist you are, there's so much that you can do, for me at least, on my own. There's so much that I also want to do on my own. I don't want to carry all the burden, all the weight on my own. So something like listening to your wife, you know, sometimes we just want to talk to somebody. We want somebody who understands, somebody who's there, who's listening, who is going to be, you know, within themselves, you know, their own thing going on. But I need to know that you are a partner with me. I need to know that I'm not on this journey alone. I need to know that you're not with me and then with everybody else outside. You know, I need to have that kind of security. So, I mean, respect to the women out there who want to do everything on their own, but I am not like that. I am a product of very, very strong-willed women within my bloodline and within my education line. But I am somebody still who will just humbly say, and it is a vulnerable thing to say, that I because when I lost my grandmother who lived with us, I looked around and everybody else in my family had a significant other that they were leaning on. And at that time I was single and I didn't. And I really wish in that moment of weakness, and I'm, you know, I don't shout and I'm not loud in the overt way of being strong. I know that I'm strong, but in that moment as well, I felt like I could really use somebody as well to pick me up. And I have those moments as well. And I think, just to wrap it, my grandma, the same woman who passed on, who's very, very wise, she said, we were born for companionship. JL said it, you know, we were born for relationship. And if we find that harmony, you know, and Aaron, I loved your intro, you know, just be you, just pray and find the person who's meant for you and one-on-one, and you'll just make it work, whoever you are, without the influence of what everybody else says. You know, step away, decide who, know and pray and discover who you are and excel at what you are, but also pray and find somebody who is going to walk that journey with you. And that is all I want, simple. You know, I take away the stress. I'm not really much on social media too much. I think it's a lot of noise, good stuff, but to me sometimes there's a lot of noise. And at the end of the day, I just want to do what I have to do. And I would love to find the right person to walk, you know, in harmony with me. And that's my answer. Yeah.
So beautiful. <It's true. laughs> I love that.
Yeah. So yes, Maria, I think we have the same grandmother. Exactly what you said. It's my experience. Same, you know, generationally brilliant woman.
Yeah.
But because of the times, but so ahead of her time, because she instilled in her girls independence, but she never downplayed men and the importance of having relationships and fitting into something to make it whole, you know? And then I went to convent too. So women of worth, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
I should be intensely feminist, and I believe I am a feminist, but more and more I think feminism has there's a path in feminism that leads down a kind of toxic route, and maybe a balanced route in terms of wanting, I can be it all. No human being can be it all. We're meant to be part of a whole. So there's toxic masculinity too emerging more and more, and I have to deal with that with my students because I teach boys exclusively. So it's concerning, but I know too that the same thing exists under the umbrella of feminism. And I think women more and more, I think a certain kind of woman who is willing to be honest and balanced and genuine is leaning towards the kind of feminism that Maria described, where yes, you want empowerment and all of that, but not at the loss of the greater picture and our bigger intention as human beings, you know? So I see more and more women embracing that balance. I can't do it all. I don't want to do it all. Maybe I could. I have the soft life. You know, and I want to be supported, and I need to be supported, and I want to support somebody too, you know? So where things are right now, I think I'm seeing more of that, more women kind of finding that balance in that realm of feminism and not burning bras and down with men and, you know? And I always say, you know, there's always this like a cycle. So women needed to be supported. Girls would not get, my grandmother didn't have the opportunities that should have been afforded to her, and the world had to fix that. So we calibrate. And there was a point where we kind of came up, but now we have to be careful that we are now hyper-elevating one thing and suppressing another, because you're going to end up with the same issue just on the other side of the divide. And I'm passionate about it because I teach boys, and sometimes the education system, the people who, we're in a debating competition, and because our head boy he's a man, he speaks like a man, his volume goes up when he's passionate, like a man. The feedback he would get is, listen, no, you can't get too aggressive, but they're girls who take in part, and they're going with, listen, when I say, and when I, they're doing all of this. So he's like, but they're doing, you know, kind of aggressive things here. So even the world sometimes seems a little bit skewed. And I don't think I'd have been aware of it if I didn't teach boys, because I came from so much feminine energy, female empowerment or whatever. So I feel blessed that I can see the other side of it. And I feel encouraged that I see more and more women wanting empowerment, wanting to do what they have to do, but realizing, hey, we have to live with the other half. And we have to probably encourage, invest, want the best for them too. It's not a fight. It's not a fight. It really was never supposed to be a fight. And so that's what I see more and more. And you know, because I do literature, I'm into Adichie, Chimamanda Adichie, and she always talks about we should all be feminists. But then she goes, that's a tag that catches everybody like, what? But when she describes it, what she's describing is like, you're supposed to want to see both sides in harmony, developed, you know? And a big part of it is supporting women within the household, etc., because they are usually the ones that have been disadvantaged historically, you know, but we don't want it. There's a danger of it flipping. And it's not going to be good for any of us if our men are not supported and invested in and catered to as well. So I'm hopeful, but I think there's a move away from the intense, toxic, green bra, do it all. Women want to be supported too and to be part of supporting a man as well. That might be.
Yeah. We need both. I'm well said, Sion. You know, we do need both. I feel like I've always been fortunate to live, I guess, a balanced life, having that perspective. I also went to, you know, a convent, but, you know, it was all about, you know, that holistic development. And then coming out of that, you know, seeing my mother with her youth, you know, Brendan was one. It was, you know, male and female. So seeing those relationships unfold before my eyes, I've always had good male friends as well as good female friends. So I've never been the girl who only had girlfriends or the only girl or the girl who's only been able to be friends with guys. Like, I've always had good relationships with both. And so I feel like as long as we're alive, there's always going to be work to do. I don't think we'll ever get to a point where the scales are equal, to be fair and frank. That is our desire, and it's always great to work towards ideals. So that is why we need to make sure we are educating our women and ensuring that they're still smashing glass ceilings, but also investing in our men and in our boys so that they feel secure in themselves, so that they don't have to feel insecure if they're with a woman who may be more qualified in terms of education than he might be, or that they might even one day be where they're, you know, they're equal on those lines. You know, because I've had those experiences as well, women who are in relationships with men who feel really, really insecure by or threatened by their qualifications or their job, or if they're making more money than them, kind of thing. And on the flip side, women who feel like they have to do that because they're not going to be taken seriously otherwise, and you know, they're not being able to find a partner because they're not sure what else they may have to offer outside of their qualifications. And I think as long as there's life, we're always going to be trying to work on that calibration. I don't know if we'll ever get this 100% right, but as Sion said, we are moving away from, you know, Destiny's Child, independent woman, I could do it for myself, lean in. You know, all of that. Yes, we have room for that as well. But we also want to know that we have a partner who's going to do the soft life with us, right? You know, who is willing to ensure that, you know, the same way we're willing to make sure certain needs are met, they're willing to do that for us. And I think in terms of Brendan's original, you know, what he posited about... I'm tired, guys. Forgive me. about being listened to. I think that is important. I think a lot of women want to feel like they have a space to be heard, as opposed to feeling like they're nagging you or like they're speaking about something that doesn't interest you, for me, reassurance is a big deal. I reassure people every day in some form or fashion. So I feel like, yes, you know, if I have an insecurity or I feel, you know, vulnerable and I want to be able to bring that to my partner, I want to be reassured. I don't want him to fix it. I don't necessarily want us to come up with a solution for whatever it is. I just want to feel heard and comforted that what I'm feeling isn't bad, or like, you know, just something that could just reassurance. Reassurance is, I think, important. So I feel a lot of women are looking for that reassurance in that space within a relationship as well.
So much things have come up between Maria, Sion, and JL's contributions. And the one thing that for me personally stood out is what JL said in terms of we may never be able to balance that scale in terms of like the expectancy of what the man is supposed to contribute and what the woman is supposed to contribute in society as a whole, right? And the salaries and all these different things, that the inequities and stuff like that. But one thing I've also watched in the world is that the goalposts of what the balance scale will be, it constantly shifts. Because what it would have been in the 1980s is not what it is today in 2024. So that's something that we have to take into consideration whenever we're having conversations like this. But I wouldn't, openly call myself a feminist. But I grew up with, I think in total, 10 aunts and 2 uncles. So since a small age, I have always been around women and listening to what they want, what they need out of relationships. And that has developed for me a lot in terms of what I put forward today into my relationship. And also a lot of the things that I speak to my brethren about too. Because we listen to what our mothers would have complained about when we were younger, about what our fathers would not have done. But yet still, to an extent, in today's world, we still commit a lot of those mistakes because that's what we know masculinity to be. So, for me, I have learned through the years what women are looking for, what they want. And at the same time, I also have seen, as Sion said, the toxic elements of what masculinity is. So I have taken what I've learned from the female side and my interactions with all my 10 aunties. I hope I say it's 10, and I ain't miss any of them because there's be vexed when I miss them out. But from all my aunties, and then look at the bad examples that I have seen of masculinity. And just like, I'm not ashamed to admit it, my girlfriend is having me watching Love is Blind, huh? So we're talking about, as in this last season, the generational curses of Clay coming back to haunt him. A lot of the men today facing some of those curses, but you know what's the sad part? We're not vulnerable enough to accept that is what we saw, and we don't want to break that curse. We'll just repeat it over and over again. So you know what? We see the hurt that our mothers went through, now, but we go and hurt with girlfriend the same way because, you know what? I see daddy do that, so that's why I know as being a man. I could have 10 women, and that's okay, because that's why I know. But we're not going to accept that if we want to move forward as a united society where men and women can walk together hand in hand to a better world, we need to stop doing some of the things we saw before and acquire the soft skills of leadership as the man, because, you know, they say that the man is supposed to lead. If you do acquire those soft skills, assume, say, when your girlfriend or your wife come to you to talk about her day and you looking to apply logic to something she just want you to sit down and listen to. If you can acquire them soft skills, trust me, you're in for a long rocky road.
That's true.
But it requires self-awareness, acceptance, vulnerability, and the willingness to work on yourself. Because you can't want to stay this straight, a straight pin all the time, But sometimes your pin might have to be a safety pin to make sure and clipping. I'm real bad with analogies, but I think all you understand.
I love it. I read it. I like it. Cardo
was not impressed though.
You know, she
I like it. I call it the safety pin paradox.
Yeah. I'm going to use that in one of my classes next.
Oh, Jill, having a little bit of a technical challenge. If she comes back in, it'll be great. If not, it's excellent timing because she got a brilliant contribution in.
She did.
Yeah, in terms of... All right, let me put it this way. My father recently passed away a couple of months ago. And one of the things I remember, he taught me several things. Not like a lot, but what he taught me stuck. One of them was that, Cardo, you have a tendency to be right a lot of the time. You have to choose between being right and having company. Because if you're right all the time, people start feeling like they're wrong all the time. So choose when to do which one now. And I was like, so I just was supposed to suppress, you know, saying and doing the right thing so that I don't make people uncomfortable. And I've decided to satisfy both my internal calibration and society's needs by presenting the truth in platforms and in spaces that it is available to them if they want it. And secondly, in terms of dialogue, conversation, personal level, what is going on? LOR. There's always say you shouldn't answer a question with a question, right? But I've started asking, and I'm trying to make it a habit of asking LOR. Listen, what do you want? Do you want me to listen or you want me to reply? Now I'm going to adjust my reply to reassure. And the reason I'm going to adjust my reply to reassure is because at the end of the day, another thing that he taught me was that when you see an alcoholic in a bar, it's not because he wants rum, you know, it's because he wants company. A lot of the times, and this is a mistake that we make as men, we believe that when a woman engages us in communication, that she wants feedback. A lot of the time, she don't want feedback. She wants to not feel alone in the thing that she's navigating. So us trying to solve it is partially because, one, as men, our sense of worth is generally tied into productivity, contribution, doing. So when we feel like we can't do something, we feel like we don't have value. Now, that is one of the generational curses that we had to navigate. At the end of the day, Cardo value is not because he's an eloquent speaker and a great thinker. Cardo value is in the fact that God made Cardo. My value is in who I am, not what I do. But the rest of society does not agree. If Cardo don't provide something, he is worthless. So you know what we do? We are compelled to try to do. So now we have to unlearn this compulsion to do, or to fix, or to solve, or to present value, and supply you with a space that nobody ever taught us how to supply, and we don't understand the value of it. So, bottom line is, I'm going to try my best to keep learning, and the reason that the scale will probably never be equal and thus balance, and we'll get it right, or the goalpost is where it is because if we attain that, there is no potential for it to improve. However, if it keeps moving, we have the opportunity for continuous improvement, and we could improve up. So instead of ever hitting 100% and flatlining, we keep improving with the changes and the growth, the ebb and the flow, the back and the forth, the tide will come up. So we will... I don't think we will naturally or socially ever get to that space where we get it right. Because I think the objective is to get it better. Short answer, Jeddah, that listener reply thing, that's going to take a long time for us to figure out how to do it properly. But ultimately, though they got hers, but women kind of had to learn what they want too, because we can't keep trying to figure out something y'all haven't figured out yourself to help you, but not even if we're figuring it out, presenting it to you. Because that's
what I was going to say. I was like, I've learned in marriage to just say, I just want you to listen. And that's so helpful, because then you'd go into, okay, right. Yeah, I could, right? Or what you think I should do? You good at this? State it. You are good at this kind of thing. So I just want you to tell me. Am I right? Am I, what you think? Give me. And so I give cues, because sometimes we have to help. We had to help men. Oh gosh, really? And it helps me, my anxiety, my sanity, my, oh God, this man, I don't want to hear what you, I just want you to listen. All of that takes out of me. So it helps a lot to just say, I just want you to listen to what I have to say, because this was crazy. You know, just tell me, yeah, I'm out. Or tell me what you think. So I put it, maybe that's teaching. I put the task in front of the discussion. Tell me what you think. Listen to this and give me your 2 cents on this. Or listen to this and tell me if I'm thinking straight on this or whatever. Or I just need somebody to hear this crazy story. All of that before. And it has helped. Of course, sometimes I drop the ball. So you're right. Sometimes as women, we have to communicate. What does he really want out of this exchange? It's a work in progress. Agreed. Yeah.
No, but Sion, just to piggyback before Zoom jumps in here, that goes back to, I think, what I said at the start, where, yeah, just how you're dating with intent, right? State where you date, state where you're dating for. If you come to me, state where you're communicating for.
Yeah. If you, we just find all you should know. In our romance,
we know that's how we wired.
You all wired a certain way. We find, I want a man who's just in tune, and he just know. And it takes a while to grow out of that and to evolve out of that. But you do. You can. But you have to have a certain amount of emotional intelligence to realize that fairy tale that you come into adulthood with from amongst your friends who would just know. Because that's how women are in our relationships. So we think that the relationship, this other close relationship that we're entering into, is going to be a mirror of our female relationships. So we have to learn now. Hey, no, it's not. And that's why it's really important what JL said, to have male relationships. I've had a lot. I have mostly male cousins. I'm the only girl, one other girl, and a whole host of boys. Went to Benedict's. I love the fact that I had those experiences, because I learned so much about male interaction and expectations and how you set up those kind of communications. But not every woman has that experience. And even me with all that experience, I still sometimes find myself in the, he should know. He should just know. I mean, and I have to like, stop that. You're getting in the way of yourself, your relationship, your poor husband, frustrated. And I go back into, here, this is what I need, this is what I want, blah, blah, blah. It is a work in progress, but we wired a certain way, and we tend to think that some of our most intimate relationships, which is what we had with our besties and our girlfriends from since primary school, is now going to automatically translate into this wonderful relationship that I am so happy to have with this person who I'm so close to. And I think it's going to be a mirror of that. And I had to unlearn a lot of the things from that end. Yeah.
Now I know Brendan messaged about half hour ago to say that we're gonna wrap up in 15 minutes, which was 15 minutes ago. So I wanna propose something similarly based on the template that we had before. The conversation was too sweet, we had to do a part two. Now we kinda discussed the tightrope that both men and women have to walk in terms of navigating relationships, but it have a huge elephant in the room that we haven't addressed, right? Which is this the table talk now, you know, what you bring into the table thing. So I don't know if I'm fully open to the idea of, well, having had this discussion on the tightrope, that we do a part two about the table, because that's a whole other thing in itself. And even though we lean into it with the woman of words and, you know, the value systems and, you know, the sense of men being providers or else they have no value, that type of thing, I would like to dedicate a space to the table. I don't know how I feel about that.
Agree.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah. Is
there
a red table?
What?
Is there a red table?
Talk
about what color
the table is. Jesus, Lord.
No. On a red table.
I'm afraid of a red table.
I'm not a Will Smith, no?
Next thing, you know, all of us are nice out of here. But who? IRL.
My heart bleeding for that man, but
anyway, that go talk in the party. But but the reason I bring that up is because I also wanted to give Brendan an opportunity to respond to the LNR, you know, to that point, and take us home. But
yeah,
confirm that we in for that part too, because me and Leonard tell you, people need to hear this.
Yeah, I like what everybody bringing to the table. Talk once we could talk about the 200 of our day too as well, because I have some strong beliefs about that. Real strong.
I have some suggestions as to where you could go.
Yeah, exactly, because I believe in anyway. Okay. I'm really happy with everybody's responses, because it just gives you all the nuances of that whole part of the communication concept in terms of knowing, you know, like for me, and a lot of these things is be personal to me in terms of wondering if it's just me or if the world in this space too, because, you know, there's me, there's Brendan, and then there's Zoom on this side, and it's, I still learning about these two people, much less to learn about, you know, not saying that you don't learn about your partner and stuff like that too, but in terms of having that level of understanding where you're supposed to know certain things, sometimes you just don't know. Certain things you pick up on, yeah, but certain things you just don't know. And I just openly say, listen, I don't know, you know, but if you tell me, then, you know, we could have a conversation, you know. So I think that's healthy, and I think that builds beautiful relationships in terms of the conversation, you know. And it's sad that we had a close here, because I think we could get into that really spicy part too. And I'm really happy that Cardo brought it up, because I watch any time and I know everybody's busy. Everybody has a lot on their plates, especially this couple of weeks coming here. School, work, and all of that. So let me close off this part of the session by saying this was a great conversation. I love the fact that we could still take a very complex topic and be funny and still be serious at the same time, to speak about mental health and where we are, to talk about our own lived experiences, because nobody will talk about something from the point of view of an abstract. It's either you lived it yourself or you know somebody that lived what you're talking about, and you want to share it in that open forum. I think that's really, 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 really important. And of course, you know, to all the listeners out there who listen to us, you know, we love having these sorts of conversations, and thank you for the time, you know, being patient with us in terms of when we're coming up with concepts and we're putting it out there. Thanks a lot for being out there as part of the audience, and the feedback people stop me on the road, and you'll be amazed. Sometimes I in conferences, something I people like, hey, I listen to so by so, or I know this person who was on the podcast with you, or I know, you know, it's been a real nice a nice feeling, the impact, you know. So you all are part of that with us. So thanks a lot as well. So let me personally say thank you, Jill, thank you, Sian, thank you, Maria, for being on with us. And I will leave the floor open for you all to say anything last that you want to say, and then I'll let Aaron and Ricardo close, right?
Well, yeah, I'm looking forward to
it. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and then sorry, there's something called the Blue Pill Movement. I think we could chat on that next time. I don't know if y'all heard of it, but it's like piggybacking on what Sion was saying, where men are retaliating now against the ultra feminism. And yeah, so that could probably be chatted on in the next conversation. We'll probably talk about that. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm looking forward as well. As usual, it's been a really good conversation. I love to hear the other side, and I love to hear what other women are thinking. I teach, so I'm usually not talking to my generation very often, so I welcome it. And I, of course, whatever I get, whatever I learn, feeds into what I do daily. So looking forward to part two. This was good, guys. Thanks for encouraging and involving me.
Yeah, this was a great appetizer. I'm looking forward to the main course in part two, where we'll be discussing the real meat of the matter. So I'm very excited to hear any views. I think it may be more of a fiery discussion, and I'm definitely up for that.
But y'all, thanks for including me again. It's always so fun to, I love to listen to you all. You're really stimulating. So thanks for including me.
The point I was just trying to very not like this, I wasn't trying to defoot. The bottom line is, right, we're not talking about our year, right? Is that I was curious if Maria was to do, like, you know, another, because of our year, that year in COVID, that year where she did this project, if she was to do a follow-up, how different a story would she tell? Yeah, that was the thing I was trying to do, but nobody wanted to let, you know, be you know, so go and check out Maria K. Lewis, our year. Are you still available on YouTube or
YouTube, yeah. Yeah, and I've done subsequent shows to that. And then we might have a little team. We're working on some new short films right now. So, and everything I write is where my mind is currently. You know, so I see the growth of myself through the films and TV shows I create, you know, my hopefully my maturity with it. So stay tuned. And as soon as those are out and edited, I'll share them with you all for y'all to check out it. Yeah. So hopefully you will like them.
Yeah, we will promote it on our platforms and stuff too.
Thank you. Appreciate
because,
it.
Because so many of the listeners just do the audio and don't know the pleasure of this visual conversation. Could you call out what your website is so that they could find your current project?
Thanks. It's Sizzle Island. I'll spell it Sizzle, SIZZLEISLAND, SizzleIsland.com. And just go on there and you have everything. You could click on the our films and TV shows, Sizzle Island TV, and you could check out the whole collection of movies, like about 40 of them, I think I have so far. And then on my YouTube has about 60 something videos. Yeah, Sizzle Island. Just type in Sizzle Island across social media. Yeah. Thank you. The shout out.
Jay has been saying that technology won't let her be great today. Right? She's looking forward to the main course. This was just the appetizer. Thanks for the invitation. Oh, Brendan says no problem, Jay, we go work out something. I might be oversharing now. But I appreciate you all, and I'm just going to kick it over to Aaron, because anything I say after this is just fluff.
He mute me, but it's cool. Thanks for coming out to the ladies and having this conversation with us. I really enjoy having conversations, as Sion just said, with persons within our age group like this, because admittedly, because of even with some of my brethren and some of the other circles that I engage in, a lot of these conversations either have with people older than me or people younger than me. So it's good to hear these conversations within our age group. Caro, just a total side note, wherever you find that sweater, let me know. I find it real hard.
Yeah, real low.
I want to get one, probably the same color.
Because I think
we'll just have to coordinate so we wouldn't look the same, all right?
The odds of us being in Matthew.
It's peach.
It's nice.
Salmon.
Salmon.
Saying something.
Alright. Alright. Inquisitive minds, as usual, it is a pleasure. Now that I know I could say things, I always need to remember that it's not radio. And I could be a little more raw in some of the things that I say, and don't package it as nicely. But it's always a pleasure to be on this podcast, man. I can't say that enough. And just on the topic in closing, fellas, there's nothing wrong with being emotionally vulnerable with your partner. But ladies, do not weaponize that emotional vulnerability your partner expresses with you. So as much as you want us to be emotional, don't take that emotion, form it in the sword like what Zoom go and tattoo on the head and hit people chop with it. That's all I had to say.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, hey. That's good. That's true.
I didn't say wise things ever so often, Cardo. Remember that.
De vez en cuando, de vez en cuando. Hey, listeners, check us out. This is the Inquisitive Minds podcast. We're available on Spotify and all other major podcast providers. Yeah, and for those of you who want to see what the visuals look like, we have a couple of the episodes up on YouTube as well. Just look for Inquisitive Minds. INQUIZITIVEMINDZ, wherever you put the F.
Put Fuzzy. Coco! It just fits in right there. I'm sorry. Just fits in perfectly right there.
Yeah, that's making it into the edit, though. Just telling you. Wow.
Wow. And you know what? I'm going to become a meme now.
Wow.
Hello.
Hey. What is
Hi, Dante.
God bless. Thanks, everyone.
We can't even fake a flat tire, right? And kneel down with a wheel spanner and hand you a ring and ask you to marry me again. Because you know what? She sees somebody fly the woman to some Ferris wheel in Las Vegas and have somebody skydive with a ring in his hand or some kind of...
Hey, keep it local, Nakaro.
All right. You know what?
Keep it local.
You had to rent out the whole of the Wild Fowl Trust.
Right.
And a Scarlet Ibis had to come in with a ring. Right? And deliver this ring to you. Right? And you had to catch it on camera. And it had to be caught on camera with the proper lighting and a whole team of people to make sure that your makeup good, your camera work good, your videography on point. So now she know you're going to propose and you all turn it into... online event.